Welcome to Slaking Thirsts, a podcast that's all about bringing the thirst deep within our hearts for love and communion to the heart of Christ, a divine heart, who is seeking our love and communion in return. The hope is that the two thirsts would meet and both thirsts would be slaked.
In the church's rubrics, there's only 2 days throughout the entire liturgical year where the church, in her rubrics, gives instructions to priests or deacons about the length of the homily that they should preach. That's today and Good Friday. The church says that a brief homily may be given. Which is ironic and difficult because on Palm Sunday and Good Friday, we're plunged into the very heart of the mystery. And we literally could preach for days on these events, but the church, our mother, right, she's inviting us rather to shut our mouths. That's what the word mystery means, muein in the Greek, to close one's mouth, to let all mortal flesh keep silence and to contemplate the horror and the beauty that's at the heart of the world, the access mundi, the turning point around which the salvation of the cosmos revolves. So for this brief reflection, and I promise it will be brief this morning, let me begin by directing our attention first to something that seems, given everything we just heard, given everything that these days are going to be, something that seems, for all accounts, pretty out of place. It's the beginning of the gospel that we had. The first thing that we hear that kicks off Passion Week is that Jesus is in the home of Simon the leper. And a woman comes in with an alabaster jar filled with 300 days' wages, thousands upon thousands of dollars, we might say, of costly aromatic oil, spikenard. And she breaks the jar and she pours the whole contents on Jesus' head. And then what we hear next, the reaction in the room is critical. There were some who were indignant. Why has there been this waste of perfumed oil, they ask. It could have been sold for more than 300 days' wages and the money given to the poor. Mark even, he tells us that they were, quote, infuriated with her. Infuriated. Mind blown. Aghast. Shocked by just such a lavish, such a prodigal, such a wasteful gesture. Why? Because the hearts of sinful and blind and small-minded men that measure and calculate and weigh the options, that hedge their bets, that hold back just a little just in case, like their hearts were utterly blind to the logic of love and the law of excess that was on display. For it's the law of extravagance, not the law of pragmatism. That's what holds sway when love is on the line. Extravagance, not pragmatism. And then Jesus turns to this woman. He looks at her and he speaks to the apostles in the room. He's looking at this woman of waste, this woman who irrevocably broke open her costliest possession. Just what was she saving it for? What was she saving up to purchase this? And she breaks it open, and all of the treasure is drained upon him to the last drop, right? He turns to her, and he says, "She has done a good thing for me. Amen, I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed to the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." And it's true. Every single year, we hear her story. Like, wherever the gospel, the true gospel, right? The only gospel that there is, the story, it's the unbelievable story, the too good to be true story of like what he's done for us, what he's done for men. Like he says, her gesture will be recalled. Why? Because it's an icon of the whole mystery, right? The alabaster jar, it is the Father's heart. Jesus is the nard, the costly oil beyond price that was broken open and poured out upon humanity to save us, to rescue us, to ransom us, to divinize us. Friends, what we contemplate this week in these days, it's not the pragmatic, calculated, careful solution that the Father set upon when surveying his options to how to save humanity. What we contemplate, it's the lavish extravagance, it's prodigality beyond comprehension. If you come to the Easter Vigil on Holy Saturday, in the Exultet, you'll hear this line chanted, that to ransom a slave, you gave away your son. A son for a slave. That's the absurdity of the logic of heaven. And this, the handful of these indignant apostles, they could not comprehend such love. Judas, right? Most certainly couldn't. In fact, it was seemingly this absurdity that pushed him over the edge and led him to throw Jesus to the wolves. The question is, what about us? Where do we stand? And what do we conclude as we gaze upon the crucified? Look, you don't have to understand it, but you have to reckon with it. You don't have to understand it, but you have to reckon with it. Like, who must you be? Like, what must you be worth to him? Like, what dreams and desires must he have for you personally that he would choose to bankrupt heaven for you? Friends, if that doesn't overwhelm us, if that doesn't overwhelm you, I don't know what could. Throughout these holy days, we are led to drink from the fountainhead of glory itself, and to be just totally inundated and overwhelmed by our God's extravagance. Let me end again with these words from Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI. I shared these words in a homily earlier in Lent, but it bears repeating. Christ is the infinite self-expenditure of God. Excess is God's trademark in his creation. At the same time, excess is also the real foundation and form of salvation history, which in the last analysis is nothing other than the truly breathtaking fact that God, in an incredible outpouring of himself, expends not only a universe, but his own self in order to lead man, a speck of dust, to salvation. So excess is the real definition or mark of the history of salvation. The purely calculating mind will always find it absurd that for man, God himself should be expended. Only the lover can understand the folly of a love to which prodigality is a law, and excess alone is sufficient. Excess alone is sufficient. Amen.